Early in 1895, Mrs. A.E. Vessels, with other members of the diamond-rich South African family, visited the school site at Kooranbong, New South Wales, Australia. Mrs. Vessels' daughter, Anna Lindsay, donated $5,000 to help establish the school. In April, Ellen White traveled to Tasmania for a month to attend a church convention and the wedding of 40-year-old Willie and 21-year-old May Lacey.
Mother White, could I speak with you?
Why, certainly, May. What's on your mind?
It's the wedding ring. I've read your counsel that money shouldn't be spent for a circlet of gold to testify that we're married.
Well, I wrote that to the American workers a couple of years ago because some thought they should follow the custom of this country in wearing the ring.
Well, I have no desire myself to wear the ring, but my father, he's adamant about the duty of a wife to wear one. He'd be very upset if I didn't, especially since I shall be traveling extensively with an American nearly twice my age.
Well, there's certainly something to that. I realize your British custom is quite different from the American.
And if I were to travel with Willie without the sign that I was his wife, people would be led to imagine all sorts of things, and we should lose much of our influence for good.
My dear, if you'll remember, I also wrote in that testimony that we have no burden to condemn those who have their marriage ring. I have no objection whatever to your wearing one.
May and Willie were married May 9, 1895. 3 weeks later, Ellen and the newlyweds returned to Granville, where Willie's daughters, 13-year-old Ella and 8-year-old Mabel, had arrived from America. They were all delighted to be a family. Ellen's household was large, for, as usual, she had taken in a number of needy adults and children, providing jobs for some who had lost their income on accepting the Sabbath, and paying for the education of several children. To help provide cash for establishing the training school, Ellen bought 40 acres of the estate at Kooranbong, and in August 1895, the middle of the blustery, wet Australian winter, the 67-year-old woman visited the property with Emily Campbell and Ella. They lived in tents while Ellen made arrangements to plant orchards and build a home, and went in search of cows.
You drive horses very well, Grandma. I thought you were too sick.
I was sick when we first came here, Ella, but I'm feeling much better now.
Maybe you'd better wrap your shawl a little tighter, though, Mother White. The wind's picking up, and it looks like it's going to rain again.
Emily, I was born in Maine and lived for years in Michigan. After the winters I experienced there, a little rain and wind isn't going to hurt me.
Ooh, Grandma, look at all the piles of big trees burning.
Yes, the clearing is moving quickly, Ella, both on my property and on the school land. Brother Metcalf Hare has a lot of experience in clearing land. He and brothers Lawrence and Rousseau are leading groups of manual training students in the work. We have to get our orchards planted right away or lose a whole year.
What's wrong with waiting?
We have a duty. Preaching the gospel means more than just talking about Bible texts. The light given me from the Lord is that whatever land we occupy is to serve as an object lesson of what the land will do if properly worked.
People are already learning. They come to listen to Mr. Mosley tell how to grow fruit, and they buy trees from Mr. Rousseau.
When right methods of cultivation are adopted, there'll be far less poverty. If we accomplish this, we'll have done good missionary work.
Hey, there's a farm. Is that the one that has a cow for sale?
I believe it is.
Mmm, a nice Jersey cow to give us lots of cream. I love cream and honey on my bread. Annie's learning to make real good whole wheat bread, Grandma. I'm glad you're teaching her to be a cook.
So am I, Ella. Now, let's go see about buying a cow.
On a summery Christmas day, 1895, Ellen's working family moved into the new house, Sunnyside. With a loan from the Vessels family, building at last began on the school, and on October 1, 1896, Ellen laid the first brick of the women's dormitory. Early in 1897, Willie had to leave for the United States, and Stephen Haskell came from Africa to help. Haskell's wife, Mary, had died in 1894 at the age of 81. One night, the 61-year-old widower, overcome with loneliness, fell into a restless sleep, but was soon awakened by a light.
What's that light? Why? There's someone in the room. Who are you?
Stephen.
Mary?
Stephen, I've come to bring you comfort. I shall ever watch over you, for I'm nearer to you now than when I lived on earth.
It's Mary's voice. So natural. So sweet.
That's it. Reach out your arms to me.
No, no, no. The dead know not anything.
Oh, Stephen, don't you know me?
No, I never knew you. You're not my Mary. You're an evil spirit sent by Satan to deceive me. And in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, I command you to depart and to trouble me no more. Oh, it's gone. It looked and sounded so much like Mary. But in that instant before it vanished, the gentle expression turned to malignant rage. Have I shown some weakness? That the devil dared to approach me like this?
As Stephen prayed earnestly, he remembered Ellen White's counsel in early writings, in which she said that the spirits of devils would appear to the saints, professing to be loved ones. Then he prayed again, thanking God for the warning against the subtle enemy. Now, in February 1897, the 60th year of Queen Victoria's reign, 64-year-old Stephen and 40-year-old Hetty Hurd were married in Sydney. Hetty had worked with Stephen in England a few years earlier, and they had recently become reacquainted in Africa, where she was teaching. After the wedding, the couple hurried to Kuranbong to teach at the school. There was work to be done first, though, and as the opening date for school approached, Medcalf Hare reported a new crisis.
Sister White, thank you for inviting me to meet with you and Sister Haskell and Sister McIntyre this evening.
Thank you for coming, Brother Hare. We need to discuss the problems with the building work.
I've noticed that the brethren who are working off their pledges are doing work that's, well, indifferent at best.
Aye, Sister McIntyre, and when we told the paid workers we had to cut down on hours to save money, many of them left to get jobs that pay better. Sure, and I don't see how we can get the work finished on time.
The school must open on time.
Sister White, since Pastor Haskell was called to Adelaide because of Pastor McCullough's apostasy, the heart's fair gone out of me.
It's well, we're all saddened that Pastor McCullough has turned his back on the church, and after his miraculous healing, too. I heard about that.
Tis true, Sister Haskell, but even if your husband succeeds in winning Pastor McCullough back to the truth, the fact remains that we're out of money, and we just can't finish on time.
Could you give me some figures? For instance, how many hands are needed on the building? How many on the cistern? How many... Well, I believe I've got it all written down. Thank you, Brother Hare.
But I don't understand, Sister Haskell. What good will all this do?
We'll have every position filled.
It's impossible. You'll never do it.
Oh, I wouldn't be so quick to say impossible. Sister Haskell has a way of getting things done. And I'll help. At tomorrow's 6 a.m. meeting, I'll call for a work bee. For my part, I'll lend my workmen, Brethren Connell, James, and Warsnap, and I'll pay their wages.
No need to pay me, Sister White. I have a 2 weeks' pledge to work out.
Thank you, Brother Connell.
And I'll give it a week's work without pay in any place you put me.
Me too.
So will I.
You can count on me.
Wherever you need me.
Hello,
How are your spirits now, Brother Hare?
Excellent, Sister White. We've over 30 people here, and they're not just mucking about. Women and children cleaned the first building yesterday, and some girls passed bricks to Brother Richardson in the cellar.
And who are these busy carpenters with nails in their mouths?
Good morning, Sister White. Brother James positions the boards, and Sarah and I drive the nails in.
You're doing an excellent job of it, Sister Haskell. You're nearly halfway through already, and you've only been at it one day.
Sister Haskell's leadership has helped more than I can say. The women's diligent work has done more to inspire the men than any orders I could give.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. I've received some good news from Willie, too. He writes that the General Conference has voted to send Professor C.B. Hughes here from Texas. Professor Hughes is a well-qualified and experienced educator.
Wonderful!
Stephen McCullough was returned to the fold, but unfortunately he left the church again in 1899 because he disapproved of paying salaries to ministers. The Kurrenbong building project was completed. Sarah McInturfer raised money to buy a bell for the institution, and Avondale School opened on schedule, April 28, 1897, with two students. The enrollment quickly grew to 62 pupils, most of them academy age. The dream had come true at last. The Austral-Asian Union had a training school.